kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
That's a loaded question.
Why?
I have a horrible toothache.
You have a horrible toothache? We've been gone for 3 weeks, and your first thing back is you're going to start bitching?
I have a toothache, yeah. Like, I've been fine this whole fucking time. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're going to record tonight. And about 2 hours ago, my mouth is like, fuck you.
That's beautiful.
I drank some tea. I took some Vicodin. We'll see how I fly. I might very well be flying.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good stuff. I have no clue who that was.
That was
me. I assume it was Purnell. That was a very Purnell sounding thing.
I have no idea who that was. That could have been anybody. Could have been Joe.
No, it wasn't me. I'm trying to get used to these new headphones. We should probably get this out of the way. Purnell's here. Chris Taylor's here. And Ian Griffin, aka Doc Havoc, is here. How are you guys doing?
Anyone else first?
Well, I'm not on the tail end of a cold. Other than that, I'm doing great.
Me,
Chris, how about you? Chris has gone quiet.
He's gone.
Chris only Zool.
He had to go turn laundry.
Oh, he's doing laundry too. He stole my bit.
I too am doing laundry.
Oh, hey, hello. Chris is here. We got Chris Huber. Chris, how are you doing?
Hello, Chris. Welcome to the party.
Did I time it right?
No, but you did the thing, and we're proud of you for that.
Yeah, you're here. Close That's enough. All that matters.
Yeah, sorry, I'm late. I mean, better late than never, right? Is that
very true? Chris, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm trying Slay the Spire for the first time since I guess they got an update.
Well, I know where this conversation is going.
So, update on what? On console or PC?
On my PC with the Game Pass thing.
Oh, okay. I might have to try it that
did
way.
Did the PC version get achievements?
I don't know, actually. Shit. I haven't really been like paying attention to the achievement stuff when it comes to like the PC Game Pass thing. I know you guys are all about your achievements. I just don't care anymore.
Yeah, that's what I've been waiting for, is for it to get achievements.
The only achievements that I cared about were the skate achievements that I was missing that I started to like grind away at, but then for some reason, maybe Joe, you can help me with this, for some reason the Game Pass thing, like the ultimate one, it gives you gold, which I know because we've been playing online and stuff, right?
Yeah.
When I try to play online with a backwards compatible game, it doesn't say that I have gold.
Weird. Did you try contacting Microsoft at all?
Yeah, nobody said anything.
Oh, God.
Like, literally, he called and the line was just dead.
Like, I did, like, an email thing or whatever, like an email support ticket or whatever. I did one of those, didn't hear anything back. I like scoured the forums for a little bit. Didn't see anything that like made any sense. So I'm just like, okay, that's just how it is. So whatevs. I think I'm missing like one achievement, maybe two now.
I don't know how well my microphone is picking up the purring or not.
I didn't know anyone was purring except for you.
Oh,
and now
shucks.
I know that you were.
I'm holding Butter, who I just found under my desk. Butter has been assassinating all of my electronics lately with cords.
Assassinating them,
yes.
You say? Yes.
He's already murdered one of my headsets and two keyboards.
Gotta lock the office. Butter. They need to go in there for that stuff?
Well, there's no way to just keep one or two of them out without letting all of them, like keeping all of them out. And Coltrane uses this room kind of like a safe space to get the hell away from all the other cats. So we can't completely shut them out.
Nuts.
Yeah, that's the life of a cat house, man. You have no control over anything.
They run your show.
They do.
SML podcast. I am your host.
Run by cats.
Run by cats.
Meow, meow.
So anyway, it is 2020. It is a whole new year. A bunch of us spent it at MAGFest the first couple of days of said new year. Chris, I know you don't have the most time in the world, so tell us, how was your MAGFest?
Dude, it was one of the better ones that I've had in years, but I still feel like I didn't do enough. Like, it's fucking crazy. Like, that place is a time warp, and I just don't understand how it happens every time. Like, I specifically tried to make it so that it was, I feel like I actually succeeded. I shouldn't say try. I wanted to treat it like an actual, vacation, because that's initially when I decided that I was going to start going, like, that's kind of what I wanted to consider it. Was, you know, I never take vacations. This is my vacation.
Yeah. Instead of getting roped into working every time you go,
every single time I'm there. So I'd have some sort of obligation, whether it be like, you know, if I'm doing a jam space set or like whatever, like I would have something going on. And then that would turn into, okay, well, if I'm playing Saturday, that means like, even if I'm playing at like 9 or 10 o'clock at night, my entire Saturday, I'm just going to be like repping stuff for the show. Like, yeah, I might spend some time like getting some food or whatever, but the majority of the time that I spend that day is probably going to be working on the set.
Yeah.
So with you only being there like 3-4 days, it just felt like I was eating into my mag time a lot. So not having any kind of like specific things that I had to do this year was really good for that. But I didn't really like, I don't know, like I did chill a lot, but I ended up like hanging out. Like, I was bouncing around a lot. Like I met, there's a guy that I play Rocket League with a lot, with Adam and them. And he was at MAGFest for the first time. I bumped into him and like hung out with him for maybe like an hour, nice. Maybe that. And like, I was supposed to like bump into him again, like on Saturday and Sunday. And like, it just didn't happen.
That's the beauty of MAGFest, man. You can make plans, mm-hmm. and
it just
doesn't matter.
It's mm-hmm. so crazy. It's so crazy.
Yep.
Cornell, I barely saw you this year.
But you were up the room, were you?
Once.
Yeah.
Cornell, are you even there?
Maybe. I'll never tell. Oh, crap. I just told.
I think it was what? It was the first night, and that was it, right?
Yeah, that's like the only time I saw you at MAGFest, Purnell.
Me and Mag have a weird relationship these days. Like, I don't get fired up for it, really. Like, I go, and I won't lie, I enjoy myself for the most part. But there's always, like, this niggling that's just, like, saying, like, you don't really belong. Like, you don't really fit in with this thing. But you're here.
I wouldn't say that. I think so how many times have you gone now?
Let me see. 1, 2, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. So let's just say like 10 at this point. Let's just go a rough 10.
I just love 12. Your gap. 1, 2, 10.
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like, I don't know if it was just different for me from like the first time that I went, but I really felt like the first time that I went, I already felt welcomed and like,
oh, don't get me wrong. The welcome I get is because in the welcome sense, it's more like, you know, the people typically say it a lot. They're like, you know, when I'm here, I can pretty much do whatever and no one's going to judge me for it, which is the welcome sensation. So to speak, like I can just be myself. But it's like it might. I'm not sure if it comes down to things like, you know, just like the memeage that pops off all over the place. That I don't get because I'm old, or like not having the tons of like social like pinpoints like I would probably have had like maybe decades ago or something. Like, I'm thankful for the people I can see there. Like, I get to see Joe, and I got to hang out with a number of people from from Rhythm and Pixels, folks that like popped up. I was like, hey, I finally get to meet your ass. I'm like, yeah. You know, but like for the most part, what I ended up doing is like I did Pokemon League, and when my ships were done with that, I kind of like walked around and saw different vendor booths. And like, I went to on Friday, I think it was Friday when I went up to Joe's room and hung out there for a bit and chatted. And we went to the X-Strike room and hung out there a little bit. And like, that was fun. But even the X-Strike room was like, I knew Tim, and eventually Zerum showed up, but I was like, I stopped and stand there the whole time. I'm like, I don't fit in here. But that one guy, it was just one guy that was chatting. He was pretty good. It was two people, actually, eventually. Like, it was one guy was talking to me about, like, health stuff. He was pretty awesome.
Mahoney, and he's good.
That guy was legit. And there was another guy who showed up who was from, like, New Zealand or something. And we started rattling off about board games. Rich. And he was like, oh, Martin Wallace, you like his games? I'm friends with Martin Wallace. Like, the bullshit. He was like, yeah, man. And we started ratting off about that stuff. So, like, I get my moments where it's like, holy crap, this is pretty legit. I can talk about this stuff. I get it. But much of the time, I'm kind of just sitting there being like, is my time done? Like, do I not click? Am I not vibing? You know, stuff like that, you know. But overall, though, would I still recommend, like, MAG to people to go and have fun? Goddamn right I would. Because even if I just went there, let's just say I didn't know a soul in the place, right? I just showed up. Who are all these freaking whack jobs? Why do they keep screaming? I don't know the fuck is that, you know.
Oh, don't even get us started on that bullshit.
I'm tired of it. It needs to stop. Half the people doing it don't even know why they do it or what it's from. They just do it. They
just to be noisy.
I didn't know about the Joe Pesci thing until this year.
You mean Danny DeVito?
Or yeah, sorry. Yeah.
I was about to say, I just learned about the Joe Pesci thing right now.
What I mean, we have to make one now.
The Danny DeVito thing. What was it about? So there's this thing.
It was. I don't know. Like, it was down at the bottom of the fucking escalators.
Yeah.
And just like
the shrine,
dude. Like, people were leaving some ridiculous shit there, and I'm just like, I don't get it. Like,
let's be honest here. There's certain elements I will believe come from, like, a general meme. It's like a bunch of people talk about it, and eventually it happens. But there are elements, and I'm going to say the Danny DeVito shrine was one of them, where just one guy on the staff just says, oh, it's about Danny. So he just puts a damn picture up on the page that has, like, Danny DeVito's face looking at the Gaylord, and all of a sudden everybody calls Danny DeVito Con or whatever. And then this little tiny shrine just shows up at the bottom of the stairs, and everyone acts like they know why it's there. And they act like they were in on it the whole time. But the reality of it is, one guy set it up, and then everybody just jumped on it as if it was
like fucking flies, dude. It's so weird. It's really weird.
I was doing an experiment one year where I just show up there and just, like, throw some random image on the wall and give it no context and just see what people do with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just watch it transform into a meme that I didn't even set up. It's just there now. You know? Mm-hmm.
It just becomes a thing.
But I do agree. I did laugh my ass off at what they were putting there, because, like, dude, a lot of it was only Sunny references.
Well, I think we saw it when, like, not long after it was first put up, and I remember seeing it, like, Sunday morning. And it was just like, what the
fuck?
Like, the whole fucking corner of that area.
Because originally it was like this, just kind of like this cardboard, you know, background that someone propped up against the wall with a picture of Danny DeVito, and there's, like, a little, you know, wooden plate there for offerings or whatever. And then by Sunday morning, you'd swear the guy died and it was a vigil.
Right. Dude, I'm sure, I think that's the part that I just don't get. Like,
what's some of the weird shit that you saw left there?
Like, an exorbitant amount of money.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm surprised that was
containers
left there.
Containers of weed. Dude, I 100%, like, we walked past it, and I saw a dude, like, just putting a bunch of shit down there, and I'm just like, you're out of your mind. You're out of your mind.
Like, some guy's going to just go by it at the end of the day, is like, well, all for me.
Well, yeah. But then, suckers. Like, here's the other part that I don't understand. Like, when somebody saw someone do that, they would call them out on it and tell them to put it back.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say.
I was wondering about that, because, like, so is that why there was still money? Because I was sitting there, like, there's no way you'd get, like, $50 and no one would take it.
No, someone just, like, I swear someone just made it a thing to just sit there the whole fucking weekend and just call people out whenever somebody touched it. Like, just, I don't know. I don't know.
They were like the Planet Fitness siren, like, Lunker!
Yeah.
It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
I was just tying my shoes.
There's no doubt in my mind.
It doesn't surprise me, because, like, at least whoever set it up was smart enough to put it in, like, one of the most high traffic areas.
That is the spot.
The hotel. Like, yeah. Like, so, like, if you're sitting there grabbing stuff, I mean, just anyone just seeing you picking shit up, you know, they're going to, even if it's your stuff,
someone's going to see it. Like,
Someone will call you out on it.
Crazy. Fucking
I can almost picture that now. Someone like, shit, someone puts like $50 down there and like an hour later they regret, like, shit, I didn't need to put that money. I need to use that for dinner. Can you go back to pick it up? You're stealing. Oh, like, no. You're nope. Kiss my ass, my money. Shut up.
And $50 is about one dinner in a Gaylord, yeah.
No. Like half a dinner and an appetizer.
You could probably get like a couple slices of bread.
I really didn't even like, aside from just like the stuff for the rooms and stuff, I didn't really spend that much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well, that's the thing. Like this year, and I think we did it last year, like we made some really hardcore shopping runs. I mean, that list that Jen gave us, God, that like that lasted us for the weekend. We didn't really have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Unless there was, you know, a specific hankering for something that we wanted.
Mm-hmm. Well, it definitely helps if you have like a room in the Gaylord, because like me, I never typically get a room there. So this year I had a bed Airbnb over in like Port Washington. So it's not that far, but like 10 minute Uber. But mm-hmm. nonetheless, you're not going to Uber back and forth just to get dinner. So what I was doing was like I bought like a bunch of cup soups that you can just like drink cold or hot. I had like two sodas and two vitamin waters per day. I just carried them around in like a freaking Cool Stuff Ink messenger bag. And that honestly got me through for like refreshments and stuff because I wasn't paying those $5 for a bottle of soda prices. But I wanted like hardcore food, a cup of soup wasn't cutting it. So I still ended up out there on the strip looking for something to eat.
Walking down to Nando's.
That's right. No shame there, because I'm going to tell you something. If you're doing table for one, everybody gives you the evil look when they're like, right this way, sir. Individual, you say, have a seat in the corner. Like, I don't care. Give me a fucking food. That's what happened. It was like, I was like, how long till I get a seat? She's like, about 30 minutes. It's like, it's just me. It's like, oh, just you? Oh, come on this way. Come on in.
Mm-hmm. Dude, sometimes, man, like, that's what you got to do. I, the smartest thing that we did the entire weekend was Chris and I going to Chipotle the one day. Chipotle.
Chipotle.
The land of Chipotle. But Chipotle. We were
in a markup of any sort for the weekend?
No markup, and we were in and out of there in fucking like 7 minutes.
That was the fault, because I was going to ask you. They got you in and out that fast?
Dude, was it a long line? The line was to the door, and they were just fucking zooming. Like, like they're just getting through people. Like,
they probably had a lunker alarm there of sorts, too. Like, the one person goes in the line is like, can I get the special chicken, not the chicken that's on the grill? Can you go in the back and get the seasoned chicken? Like, no, no, no.
Dude, they don't deal with shit. Like, they just motored people through that place. It was really, really quick. Like, we ended up getting, we got Chipotle and made it all the way over to, what is that hoagie place?
Oh, Potbelly's.
Potbelly's. You guys were over at Potbelly's or whatever. Like, you guys were still in line and we had already gotten our food.
Like, well, yeah. Damn. But were there more people waiting in line at Potbelly's than Chipotle, or?
I think it was about equal.
Okay.
Well, does Potbelly toast their stuff, though? Because that might factor into it.
Yeah. That was so long. I mean, you can request it non-toasted, and they have non-toasted subs, but yeah.
You know those people weren't requesting non-toast. They're like, hey, I'm in front now. Service me.
Yeah. Oh, it's my time.
With the special option, with the gluten-free. And,
Bitch, order your fucking sub and move. Go.
Can you get that special? Can you get the fish? Can I get the fish? We make that to order. It'll take like 5 minutes. That's cool. Just make the fish. You son of a bitch. Guys to the right of them, it's like giving the evil look. Then it's their turn. What would you like, sir? Oh, it's me now. Yeah, I would also like the fish.
How much is the fish?
Give me a whole fish. Don't even just scale that fucker. Just put it in the rope.
I was reading, apparently MAGFest is a really, really good group, though, because someone from Nando's, I think Paul mentioned that he talked to someone from Nando's, and they said that through the whole 3 days, they didn't have a single rude customer.
That's impressive, actually.
I concur, because I mean, most of my experience of shittiness comes from like my days when I used to go to KatsuCon, but people vandalize shit and they get loud and rowdy just because they think they can. I honestly expect from mad crowds too.
I think another thing that comes into play is that like people want their food with as minimal fuss as possible. So, you know, I mean, like, you know, for example, when we were talking about the whole line comparison and how fast, you know, like when when you're going to get the food and there's like 40 people in line, you don't want to make a fuss. You just want to get your
food. You just want to get the fuck out of there. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to make it as clean and quick and convenient as possible for everybody involved. And, you know, if you're in a line for that long and you start making a fuss about stupid shit,
no, everybody's going to get pissed off at you.
Yeah.
Have you ever been the guy in the line, like say at a grocery store, right? And there's a sign on the shelf that says like buy one, get one free. So you get two things. And you get the front and the lady's scanning it and it's not coming up. And you're like, shit, but it totally said buy one, get one free. And you see the line behind, there's like three people waiting. And you're like, fuck, I don't want to pay for this, but.
Am I about to die on this hill?
Like, is this about to happen? So you make that first statement, like, resistance. Pardon me, ma'am. That's supposed to be buy one, get one free. Could you mark it? And then you just hope that she just, like, trusts you and just goes, okay, yeah, I've seen people bring that up in the past. Yeah, I'll mark it.
And then she calls the department to have some rock to check it. And then by then, you're kind of screwed.
Everybody's looking at you at that point, like, I didn't intend for
this. Customer assistance to register 12.
We've got a cheap motherfucker. Customer assistance to
register 12. Thank you.
No, most of the stuff that we did the whole weekend, like, we were just kind of like, I mean, I feel like we allotted for enough time for a lot of that stuff to go well, you know?
Did you get to see anything that you planned on going to see? Cause there were so many events and so many concerts that I'm like, oh, I can't wait to go see these guys at X o'clock.
And then
it comes along. And I'm like, I think I'm just going to chill in the room a bit longer and have another drink.
I did the same fucking thing. I did the same thing. There was like four bands that I'm like, I'm going to watch these guys this week. I didn't see a goddamn one. Like,
that's how it goes.
Now, granted, some of the stuff that I did instead, I'm glad I did it because like I got to do a jam with, oh my God, who was that guy that came up to our room with the Overwatch hat on?
Wow.
Like Jen knew who it was. He's like a rapper.
God, I don't know.
I don't even remember anyone coming up to the room with an Overwatch hat.
It was literally the first night.
Dude, you know how many people came up to our room the first night?
No. I'm talking like first night before anybody got there. Like it was Thursday night.
You imagine the entire thing. It never happened.
I still don't remember.
There was much fewer people in our room at that point.
I was gonna say it wasn't Disco Dan. Because he's not around.
No. Well, so he was organizing a jam that was essentially like a rap battle thing, but he wanted like Shed Space guys to essentially sit in and provide like the music for it. So it was the first time that I got to do like an actual.
I remember you mentioning something about that, but I have no idea who you're talking.
Dude, it was awesome. It was so much fun. I finally got to play with Antoine. Like Anton. I got to play with a bunch of guys that I finally like I got to know from going to MAG, and they were really good people, but I just never had a chance to actually like play with or for them. And it was just in such a cool format because like he was dictating like the whole jam. So like somebody would go up for like a couple bars and then he would go over to an instrumentalist and it would be like a saxophone player or something like that. And then he would like solo for like a couple bars and then he would go to like the people that were rapping and stuff like that. Like it was just like we were doing songs for like probably, I don't know, 12 minute jams. Like they were just like, it was so much fun, man. You
should have sent me a message to be like, hey, come down here right now.
It was last minute. Like it was just kind of like I was with Yusef and we were just kind of like, we're chilling, just kind of bullshitting around.
Last minute are literally the only plans I had at MAGFest.
I think it's the only kind of plans that exist at MAGFest.
Yeah.
I don't play
anymore.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I fucked up. I should have said something, but.
Oh,
it was a blast. Like I had so much fun doing that. And then even just like, I met a lot more people this year, than I have in previous years. Cause the past couple of years, it's just been us kind of like chilling and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of one of the things that I really loved about MAG was just kind of like meeting just a shit ton of people that like I.
How do you go about meeting people? What is your usual like flow when you're like, oh, I met these people? Like, how does that tend to play out?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on, like, the background. Like, for me, because, like, I'm kind of there as someone that performs, like, I kind of have that, like, camaraderie aspect to it where it's like, hey, I do the thing that you also do. Like,
That makes sense. Like, it's always like, hey, I'm a musician. I'm also a musician. You want to jam?
Kind of. Yeah, sometimes. And that's what's great about it because, like, you know, you don't, there's not too many other instances or too many other avenues that you could do that, like, outside of Meg. Like, I, you know, mm-hmm. I don't get to just casually, like, jam with people. That doesn't happen for, like, most musicians. Or the people that you end up doing that with, there's, like, people that just aren't worth putting the time and effort into because it's more of, like, a... Like, you want people that... You want to be able to, like, interact with people that you know can elevate you to be a better performer and not necessarily someone that is just...
Waving dick.
Yeah, crazy, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I should bring my XXX jug there and ask for a jam session. Right, that would be a no go. Not much elevation at all. Little intoxication, yes, but not so much in the elevation.
Well, it's different for me now because before it kind of was like I was networking a lot and trying to just meet people that were more involved with music professionally, but then it kind of became more of like, I just want to chill with my friends now. And then like, I'm trying to find a way that I could still kind of feel like I was productive on the, like for the time that I was there, but at the same time, like not just stress myself the fuck out the whole time.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. If it's not, because basically if it's work, if it feels like work, you're going to be freaking out. Like you should always be doing something work-esque.
Right, and that's kind of how I was starting to feel with always being involved with something at MAG, whether it be like the Rock Island stuff or like, you know, if I was schlepping a CD or fucking playing a set or whatever, those things really took away from that. So like I couldn't organically have those moments like I did this year, you know?
Mm-hmm. You need to make another CD to hawk at MAGFest.
I do. But at the same time, I don't want to hawk anything. Like, I like...
You like, can just no, do the wacky thing and just kind of leave it around.
Well, so, and this might not be like a popular way of looking at it, but like, and maybe it might be like falling on the sword a little bit to a certain degree, but like when Ryberg was asking me about like doing sets in jam space, like, of course the musician side of me just goes like, well, fuck yeah, it's a set. I love playing. Sure, let's do it. But especially the past like 2 years, especially last year when I did the set of like all the just like the regular cover songs, I'm like, that's when I had my moment of like, do I belong here as a performer? You know what I mean? Like when I went there the first year, like, yeah, I did a VGM related cover, like, you know, CD and schlepped that around. And like, that was kind of like, hey, like I'm trying to get involved in the scene thing. Then I realized like, especially doing like the cover band stuff, it's so difficult to put enough time aside to feel like I genuinely contribute to that scene to warrant me having a spot on that stage when there's plenty of other people. Like there was actually one of the shows that I did see was it was down in Jam Space. It was a power metal ish kind of thing. It wasn't Power Glove, but it was like Master Sword, I think was the name of them. So I checked them out, and there was this guy that Ryberg had played before Amanda Lepree. He does like he has like a keytar thing, and he's just up there doing like kind of like dystopian synthwavy kind of stuff. And he was cool, and that was the first time that he was ever at MAGFest. But he plays those types of shows like out his way. Like there's people that I feel deserve. That deserve that highlight more than I do. And
the beauty of that statement, though, is that there's probably a lot of those people who are probably saying the same thing about you, and you don't even know it. There's that whole sense of like, I don't measure up. I don't measure.
Well,
up.
It's not to say that I wouldn't do like a suitable performance. Like I know that I would, but like again, I feel like MAGFest is a celebration of like. I know it's music and gaming, but it's kind of like the music
gaming.
In gaming, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah,
you know, there's been a couple of bands, like, I know that they had Psycho Stick play there, and, like, you know, arguably they don't have much to do with video games, but they have some video game related songs. Like, that's cool. Like, I was totally fine with that, but that's also because I like Psycho Stick. I was kind of partial. I feel like there's a decent amount of people in the mag community that would look upon that and go, this doesn't belong here. And I just don't want to contribute to that.
No, like, I know they don't play video.
Yeah.
Like, it's not BGM. So it's not BGM based. So therefore, what is it doing?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Because even like when Amanda Lepre does her stuff, like, she has original songs that, like, she will sing over that are themed on, like, Chrono Trigger and, like, some Final Fantasy stuff. And it's like, she's still going out and doing shows, like, acoustic shows, like, in between the Andrew WK stuff and playing those songs. So it's like, I'm most of the time for MAGFest, I'm putting this stuff together specifically just for MAGFest. Yeah. Like, I feel like it's just as much my responsibility to know that, like, I just don't want to, I don't want to be, like, posery, if that makes sense. Like,
I definitely understand what you're saying there. But the reason why I say that is because I have to admit it. I get a lot of, like, flack from a number of, like, people, like, friends in the social, like, gaming circles and stuff, because back in the day, I wasn't big on the proto men. Still kind of am not. And it's not that I don't think they're skilled. I think they're great, good musicians. But I think it falls back to exactly what you're talking about now. Like, when I very first heard them, it was at, like, one of the really, like, one of the older bit jigs. We're talking, like 2009 or something. And they went up on stage, and they started to perform, and they had the Mega Man helmets on and everything, and I'm ready to hear Mega Man music. And they did their rock opera thing. And I was like, where's the Mega Man music? Where's Flash Man? Where's Metal Man?
Exactly. So, like, I felt like there was a lot of, like, even perfect example, last year when I did that set in Jam Space, most of the time when people were doing things in Jam Space, like, even when they were, like, the small sets and it didn't, like, the production wasn't set up like a show, most people knew that people were doing a set and, like, wouldn't come up to jam. There was a guy that literally jumped up and started trying to play with me while I was doing my set.
That was pretty funny. That was
hilarious.
Like, yeah, that was funny. It just kind of goes to show that, like, in a way, it just didn't seem right. You know, I would have loved, I even told Ryberg, like, when I was there, because obviously, like, I had my tracks and stuff. I'm like, listen, man, like, I could do a set. I would only want to do, like, maybe, like, three songs or something like that. But, like, you know, I don't want it. Like, the songs wouldn't make any sense for MAGFest, you know? Like, well, all the ones that I have, like, backing tracks for now that I have, like, rehearsed and stuff are all songs that I plan on, like, playing out at, like, acoustic shows and, like, stuff like that. Well, they're not acoustic songs, but, like, they're, you know, one's a Big Wreck song, one's a, you know, they're just general, like, rock songs, you know?
Well, one thing I can honestly say, like, this personal thought that ties back to the thing I mentioned earlier. So, the issue that I ended up taking with Proto Men back then, yeah, it did stem from the, like, it's not Mega Man music, but I think the only reason why it even developed to be a thing in the first place was because I went in without the understanding that that's what they do, right? If you're in jam space and there's an opening for you to do your thing, I mean, as long as you're just like, if I were in that room, mind you, and you were just like, hey, this is what I'm, this is what I write, this is what I play, you know, this is just my original stuff, no game here, and you just started playing out, if you sound good, you sound good, and I'm going to enjoy that shit. Now, if you went up there and was like, yo, I love Mega Man 2, let's rock out, and then you played something that sounded like it was, I don't know, straight out of, like, some, like, shoegaze thing or something, I'd be like, wait a minute, what the, again,
I mean, that's true, but at the same time, like, even last year, so, like, when I did it, like, so they all were cover songs, but they were songs that were, like, in games, they were licensed in games to try and, like, still kind of tie it together. So I would explain, like, what game it was licensed in and, like, all that kind of stuff before I went to go and play it. But, like,
that'd be cool.
But so, like, when I did it, even the songs that I picked, they were like, there was one that wasn't, which was just a meme for us, Joe.
Yeah.
But, like,
was worth
aside
it.
From, it's totally worth it. But so for those that weren't there and aren't initiated, we crop thirsted everybody.
Ooh. Oh dear.
So I played break stuff so that I could get all of Magfest to essentially sing like a pack of chainsaw, I'll skin your ass raw. So aside from that one, like I did like Ace of Spades, which is in like a Tony Hawk game. I did Raining Blood from Slayer because it was in Skate. I did what the fuck else? I'm trying to remember now.
Did something from Brutal Legend.
Oh, Children of the Grave from Black Sabbath. I did. Oh, the Saints Row one was Don't Want to Miss a Thing from Aerosmith.
Oh yeah.
I forget what the there was like one or two other ones. I can't remember them right now, but like. I mean, I still tried to make it somewhat like it belonged there.
Yeah, that's I mean, like, they were all songs from games.
They were.
And that's one that should be in a game.
That's why part of me, this is, if I am involved with a set next year, and I'll let you know about this, because I still have to talk to the guys about this, but the classic rock cover band that I have, I want to get us to learn basically a bunch of like the 90s, like the Crazy Taxi.
Yeah.
You better play. Yeah.
Right. So like learn a bunch of those songs and then go in as a band called like Tony Rock and the Pro Skaters.
Oh yes.
You've been talking about this for years. I want you to do this.
So I want to take the guys from the cover band and see if they'll do it. So I want to and then we'll learn the songs, record a thing, send it to them to do a set, and then just try and get them out to Magfest. But I feel like the next time that I play, I would like for it to be with a band. I don't know if I want to do something like by myself anymore.
In my not so humble opinion, I think you're being a little, I don't want to say overcritical, but I mean, for me, like, even if I walked in and some guy I never heard of was playing the exact songs you were playing, I wouldn't mind because I kind of go in there. I mean, it's jam space. I mean, honestly, play whatever the hell you want. You know, I mean, as long as it sounds like there's a modicum of talent behind it. That's kind of sort of the point of jam space. So, you know, I mean, as long as you're doing your thing, you're enjoying it, and the people are enjoying listening to you, and the crowd did seem to be into what you were doing, as quote unquote irrelevant as you may have felt it had been. I mean, I don't care. I mean, they were still having fun. They were enjoying what you're doing. You know, I mean, it's all gravy.
We'll see. I was kind of like on the fence about it. Once I got there and I was talking to like Ryberg about it and everything like that, like I feel like I can understand where it does have a place, but I just also don't want to become like the villain that's essentially like talked about, but within the other people that are trying to get spaces at Magfest.
I wouldn't go with that If someone's complaining that a guy who's not playing BGM got a space and they didn't, maybe they should just step up their game or stop bitching, because it's that simple. I mean, I wouldn't sweat it, but definitely wouldn't sweat it with that in mind. It's just you do you, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, the crowd will let you know. Everybody else be damned.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I mean, as long as the crowd's fine and happy, fuck them.
Pretty much.
Came here to chew gum. What kind of gum? Fuck them.
That's what I came here for.
Never heard that one before.
I never used that around you?
No.
I've used that for years. Shit.
That was gold.
Yeah. That's the first time I heard that from you.
Fuck them.
Chew gum. What kind? Fuck them. I loved it.
I forget. I'm trying to remember like who I got that from. Oh, I remember who I got that from. I got that from Ryan Williams. He played the guitar in M80.
I learned by watching you.
Learned by watching you, Dad.
Who taught you how to do this stuff?
Well, he's learned. He taught you how to roll wrong. Let me tell you how it's really done.
Yeah.
That's my boy. Whoa, how you doing, Cole?
I'm hanging out. I'm just listening to y'all's stories.
Oh, Cole, do you have any questions about MagFest, Cole?
MagFest, so. I mean, no, I just enjoy hearing y'all talk about it. At this point, I've heard y'all talk about it for a couple years, so.
We gotta get you there.
I know, we really do. Maybe next year, because we bought a new truck, so we should be mobile soon.
Nice.
And independent, which means next year, maybe we can throw our tax money at that instead of a vehicle.
There you go.
I think I'm back.
Like, the MagFest, like, carpool-y thing, too, where there are the cars, like, we're driving up. Anybody coming through from that way or whatever? Maybe I getting on one of those.
I am curious about, so, well, here's the thing. Like, if I go to a convention, I'm going to need to use a wheelchair. I'm not going to be able to walk it, even with a cane. So I always worry, I'm like, are they even accessible? That's not really
targeted. One of my friends is in a wheelchair this weekend.
Was he?
Yeah, she was in it. They have elevators and stuff. I know she was in the wheelchair. I saw her on Saturday morning, and her and her husband were there. He was pushing her, and they were.
All
they
their
got
stuff
around
is handicap accessible.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would definitely have to be wheelchair bound to follow that up.
I got a feeling that when you're in that wheelchair, people will actually, you know, not be dicks to you, meaning that it's an elevator. They will actually get the fuck out of the way so you can get on and off of it.
That would be a whole new world for me, because people are dicks when you have a cane.
A whole new world.
I hope that this year I get to go to VectorCon. Where's that? That's down in Richmond. It's at Eastern Kentucky University's Gaming Institute.
Oh.
Well, yeah. And so it's a little... Joe, I tagged you in that one tweet where a game developer from Kentucky was at MagFest with an arcade board that had 100 buttons.
100?
Yeah, I couldn't find that one. I tried looking around for it, and I didn't see it anywhere.
I actually learned about that developer when I found out about VectorCon, and I've been following them since, and I want to see that fight board so bad. I was like, I can't see it. I can send Joe for it.
I failed you.
But you did. You let me down.
Yeah. So,
damn. Could be.
That developer actually had two games on display at MagFest like that. The other one had something with like 15,000 balloons or some nonsense. It was crazy. That particular dev has a penchant for unusual games.
Seems it.
But I really want to check out that 100 button fight stick. Board thing. Oh,
that was a thing that was actually at MagFest, you're saying?
Yes.
See, I'm mad I missed that now.
Yeah.
I would have seen that.
It's badass. I've seen several pictures of it. It's like, oh, that's so cool.
There's so much about MagFest that I missed. There was apparently another arcade room that was just all retro arcade stuff.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah. I
didn't know it existed.
Joe, you got to play the best game at MagFest. Right?
Tell us what game this is, Chris.
Fucking Scoot Pooch.
Oh, what? Yeah.
What the hell is a Scoot Pooch?
Scoot Pooch.
It's the wave of the future.
Scoot Pooch is an arcade cabinet. It's two-player, 1v1, and you have two trackballs that you use to act as a dog that is wiping its ass on a carpet.
God.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to. Like,
so you're pulling yourself with the trackball.
You're track pulling balls. Yourself with the trackball.
Is this like paint where you don't want to cross shit streams with the other player's shit?
Oh my God.
No, you need to cover everything with as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. And you need to knock stuff over, break things. You can hop up on counters, couches, furniture. You need to get that shit everywhere.
Literally
everywhere.
Oh my God.
It was great. It was magical. Yeah.
It was pretty fucked up.
Pooch scooch.
Scooch scooch.
Shit the streams. Scream the shits.
Scoot pooch.
Scoot pooch.
Yeah, my little scooch pooch.
Yeah, there was a guy that was at the machine when I was like giving it a shot that was like, he wasn't the creator of the game. He was like, I've been down here playing this game so much. He's like, I hate that this is my favorite game at MAGFest.
Although my only complaint was that the player two trackballs were slightly miscalibrated.
Both of them were all fucked.
I think it was just from a weekend of people beating the hell out of the game.
Yeah.
You know, people weren't being courteous to that thing.
Not at all.
Not at all. Yeah.
Like, one thing that sucks for me, one thing I hate about the dealer's room, but I get that's how it works sometimes. Like, they have a couple board game vendors there, and as Joe can attest, I've become a board gameaholic over the years. I need to fucking go to rehab, whatever. The point is, I always go to these dealer's rooms. I'm like, all right, I paid to get into the con, and I'm hanging out. I need a deal. If I'm going to buy a game from you, cut me a deal of some sort. These are retail products. This isn't rare shit.
Agree.
And it's MSRP. I'm like, get the fuck out of here with that, man. I just bring my own game faster than this. What are you trying to pull?
No, I never understood that either, because like with how much they're actually making by having a table there for the weekend, there's no reason why they can't like do something on some, especially like a lot of modern board games are fucking expensive, man. Like,
oh yeah, they get ridiculous.
And I was kind of flabbergasted. There was one board game vendor towards the back, and when I left on like late Saturday night, but right before I left, I went to his booth, and he had a bunch of board games, all full price pretty much. But then he had a table of like PS4, Xbox One games going for 50% off. I'm like, so wait a minute. You marked the video games at 50% off, but the board games are MSRP. What the fuck's going on here? Come on, man.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Was that the table that was in with the indie game section, like all the way at the back? They had some old ass magic cards at that table.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they did.
I was blown away. It's like packs of Ice Age you could get, Alliances, 4th edition. Holy shit.
Yo,
weren't they being sold for like 40 bucks a pack?
You need to install Magic Arena so we can play again.
I don't know what Magic Arena is.
You could install it on like on your computer, and it's just a free-to-play Magic client. But they do like all the major tournaments and stuff off of that now.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Get back in the fold, Joe.
Dude, I've been playing for months now, and I have not spent a dime. It's great.
Oh, that's cool.
It begins.
I just miss the old rules and the old cards. Like, I don't know all the new shit.
Well, see, and that's the thing. Like, a new set is only what, like maybe 300 cards or something like that?
I don't know.
So you could just learn whatever the current set is, because it's all in rotation. It's all standard. Mm. So it's not like every fucking card ever. And then there's different formats where you could use like different cards from previous sets and stuff. But
yeah, cause that's how I am like with Yu-Gi-Oh! Almost. Like, I never played many of the card games, but with Yu-Gi-Oh! I still like the concept of the game. So all I end up doing is like I just wait for like that one console home release to come out. It's like, now with 3,000 cards, I'm like, I guess I'll learn this game right here. Just this one and nothing else. Until a couple years later, I'm like, I want to play Yu-Gi-Oh! Again. No, 3,500 cards. And then just buy that one. What cards are in this game? And it's kind of fun in that regard, because it's like a familiar face, but it's also brand new, because there's always that one rule tweak they add to a set, and then there's just, again, new cards. So it's like the same, but new. It's great.
They also have to antiquate a lot of the cards, and so you have to buy the new stuff to keep up.
Well, see, and that's the whole reason why I like the free-to-play like game client one, because now like all you literally have to do is they'll just give you dailies, and it's like, hey, finish this daily, you get some extra coins. Use those coins and buy a pack. Like, I don't have to feel like I have to spend a shit ton of money to stay competitive. I could just sit and just play.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't play it myself, but I have heard that they do have a really, really nice free-to-play model.
For Arena, it's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, do they make money off of like people who want extra cards, or is it like cosmetic type stuff or an avatar?
Yeah, it's both. You could pay money to get more cards, or you could pay money for cosmetics, or you could just sit and grind the game, which is what I do.
And it's not necessarily pay to win. It's more like pay for convenience.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like how it is with normal Magic cards. You buy more cards, you get better cards.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You could also be that one unfortunate soul who just dumps money and they get just as many shitty cards as anybody else gets. And the one guy got a pack for free. Oh, shit, I got this rare card here.
Yeah, that used to be me.
Hey, this one has foil on it. Does that mean something?
It's too shiny.
I'll just throw it away. I just put it in the trash bin.
Am I supposed to peel the foil off? Hold on. Let me come and try.
The best one is where the people was like, yeah, I had this one card. I think it was like an error or something. I just threw it away. It didn't seem
like...
Oh,
like a misprint or something?
Yeah. Like, no, why did you throw it away? I can't use it. It was bad.
Yeah, there is a typo in mine, so I just exchanged it.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
this one card I had didn't even have the right picture on it. So I thought the guy was trying to scam me or something.
No,
this one card, it was like a flower, something like a freaking like lotus or something.
Lotus, black lotus.
I'm not much for botanical things, so I just got rid of the card. It was a useless item anyway. It didn't fit my deck.
Black lotus.
I'm not done with those hippie crap.
How crazy would it be to like go to Magfest and they sell a pack of unlimited cards and you open it up and there's a black lotus in there?
You do realize that that's absolutely possible. I was at
I know it's one, possible. How insane would that be though?
The one GP that I was at down at Philly, they had a vendor that was selling stuff, and there was a guy that was just like, he just had a shit ton of money and he was just like, all right, I'm gonna buy a bunch of packs. And he ended up buying he got a Mox Opal. What the fuck? It was a Mox Opal, something else, like part of like the big eight, you know?
Yeah.
In that weekend alone, just from the packs that he pulled with that, he ended up making like $12,000.
Jesus.
Like, it's like, you son of a bitch.
Like, okay, you better watch your back on the way to the car, fella. Oh shit. Like, man, because like I look at that sometimes and I even kind of question, like, for example, the Black Lotus thing. Like, I'm not familiar heavily with a lot of the cards, but I know about Black Lotus because a friend of mine made a big stink about getting one at a store, turned out to be a bootleg one, but he would not believe it was. So it was a long thing there. But anyway, like the Black Lotus itself, like I'm looking at it, I was like, this card didn't seem all that special. Like, it just seems like a typical card you'd play in a set, but it's like, it's not about what it does. It's the rarity. Like, but isn't it about what the
card
does?
It is very
does?
Much what it does as well, yeah. Because it is a broken-ass card.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, because, I mean, that's broke as fucking. It was made illegal, like, in record time, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it is a broken-ass card, yeah.
Wait, it was made illegal during its actual heyday, too? Like, it wasn't just, like, a retroactive thing?
I think it was just restricted to one per deck.
It was restricted to one per deck, and then they banned it after what, like beta or something like that?
I don't know, because it was still in unlimited.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it lasted at least like one expansion, and then they were like, nah, get the fuck out of here.
They're like, nah.
Oh my god. I feel like I need to do, after this is over, to do a bunch of reaches. Like, let me hear about all these, this big eight you mentioned earlier. Where are the other seven? What makes them so powerful? Why are they banned? Do they form Exodia if you get them all? Which is obviously horrible.
Might as well.
Exodia. Yeah.
Did I ever, Joe, did I ever tell you about my only modern deck?
No.
It was literally like 52 lands, 4 treasure hunts, and a part of the lands, 4 of them were reliquary towers so that you couldn't have a maximum hand size. And then there was two of these, I think it was like a 3-drop enchantment or a 3-drop like sorcery, just like discard a land card, it creates a zombie, a 2/2 zombie. So basically, wow. I would just like, I would treasure hunt so that I would like draw basically the entire deck, drop a bunch of zombies, swing and kill you next turn.
Wow.
Actually, you may have just answered the question I was about to ask too. So, one card game that I did get into for a while was a video card game called Cold Set. Big fan of that franchise. And I have one of my good friends loves to play games like that too. But the weird thing about him is he likes to make decks or make strategies that seem to go against what the purpose of the game was.
That's what I do all the time.
It's like, are you familiar with Cold Set at all? Like how it flows?
How it flows, no.
So think of Monopoly meets Magic. You have tiles on the board that represent properties, but to claim a property, you got to put a monster card down, and then the monster defends your space if someone has to pay rent there or whatever. Okay. So you would think that was a big part of the thing. You know, you want to have powerful monsters to hold your spaces and equipment to bolster them and blah, blah, blah. But this friend decided he wanted to play a game where he had no monsters in his deck, which means he could never claim property. He only used spells and items to play the game. And he had people force quitting constantly because they were getting pissed off by this guy who would show up to the mat and just walk around and steal all their money. He would just generate money from events and steal theirs. He never claimed a single property. And it would just piss people off. And I'm just, you know, laughing like, I don't know if I'd want to play the game without actually leaving monsters on the board. That's the game. He's like, I know, but it's great to show people that you just don't need them. Yep. They don't even matter.
Well, so that's pretty cool. That's one thing that I love about Magic. One of the decks that I like to, or archetypes that I like to build, is mill decks. So it's basically just like, I'll have abilities and like certain things where it's just take the top X amount of cards off the top of your deck and just put them in your graveyard.
Wait, and just, well, why would we put them in the graveyard? Just so you can just get down to the bottom of the deck faster to get the stuff you want, or?
No, just to get rid of all of their stuff so they can't play it.
Oh, their stuff. So their top of their deck. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So, because if you go to draw and you don't have any cards left, you lose the game.
Oh.
So essentially, your win condition just becomes like, ignore their health pool. How many cards do they have left?
I would actually love to watch that match because I'm sure they flipped the table when it was all done.
Dude, I do it every set. Like, I've had a mill deck in every archetype that had cards that milled.
Oh, like, man. I swear, you'd have a guy like in a live tournament where he just has this massive deck of cards. Like,
they
I got
get
the best busters.
Pissed. Like, they get that motherfucker. So pissed. It was the only way, like, so it was the easiest way, I should say, for me to get around a lot of the archetypes of the people that had a shit ton of money. Because they would just be dumping all of this money into these really good cards. And I'm like, well, these really good cards can't kill me if you can't play them.
Mm-hmm, like, true.
Sounds legit.
So I'm like, get rid of it, get rid of it, get rid of it, get rid of it, and you're out of cards. I win.
The guy's like, my next turn, I'm going to draw a demon scalper in attack mode, and he's going to show up, he's going to do it, and you're just like, discard that.
Yeah. Well, so the other archetypes that I would always do are discard. So, like, discard, and then, like, I don't know if you remember, like, back in the day, Joe, but the rack. So it was essentially like, if you have X amount of cards in your hand or like less, then it would deal certain amount of damage to you. Mm-hmm. So I would just make you discard all your shit so that you just didn't have cards the entire game. And then while you had cards, you would just take damage.
Oof. Yeah, these are strategies I would like to see.
Like, those are the types of decks that I normally play. So that's why, like,
you're evil.
Like, watch that.
Right. But I would love to watch that. Especially on Magic Arena, because everybody's like just learning. Like, I don't want to say just learning the game, but like, there's a lot of people that go on there to learn Magic because it's free. So they're like playing like the starter decks, and then you just like kind of roll up with something like that, and they're just like, "Wait, I don't understand. How does this work?"
Oh, so you're those assholes.
At this point, that would probably be me.
I'm also the guy that uses really fringe cards so that like they have to sit and read them, like.
The paragraph like,
what
cards.
Is what is this deal? Like,
if this condition is met, follow this step.
Just go straight to my graveyard. What's going on here? I don't understand this.
Yeah. Well, see now. So again, perfect example. I have a version of a mill deck in this current meta with certain cards. So instead of milling them, I mill myself.
Why?
Because if you have the one version of Jace out, if you go to draw a card and you don't have cards in your library, instead of losing the game, you win.
Oh, God. Oh.
What, there's a monster that reverses that condition?
There is none.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, it's literally, it's just like, you win the game. Like,
oh.
That's is hilarious. Beautiful.
Yeah. But yeah. How do and I then, stop? Like, back in the day, actually, Joe, when we first met, when I was still down in Bloomsburg and stuff, when I was playing competitively then, one of my favorite decks was Adorn of Nothingness, which was basically like, you have to produce 2 mana of every single color, and then you tap the door and you win.
Interesting.
Dumb question, but how easy would that be to do?
It depends on how you make the deck.
Ah, touche.
It depends on how you make the deck. It depends on what kind of decks other people are playing. But that's the thing that I've always loved about Magic is like the level of the complexity that's actually in that game is fantastic. And there's no other game that has that kind of level to it, in my opinion. Just what has kind of like kept me like still involved with it over the years.
And it's been around for a long freaking time. Like, I think about
since
it.
I was now, I think. Fuck.
Yeah, because I've only ever played them. I've only ever personally gotten to Magic one time. And this was back in 1996. 96 or 97. And I bought a star deck from back then and like four booster packs. And that's all I have to this day. Just sitting upstairs somewhere of Magic cards. And I liked the game back then, but I was like, I can't keep up with this. I can't keep buying more cards like my friends can.
Right.
So,
well, again, that's why like I've been kind of playing it online. It just makes it like infinitely more accessible.
Yeah.
Dude, I used to be bad with it. I used to be real bad with it.
And so, he will teach you the ways by curb stomping your new ass deck into the ground.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Pretty much.
Well, you can, at this point now, with your crazy style, you can just hustle people for cards now. Like, hey, man, I'm playing Magic, but I'm a little unconventional. You mind if we just, you know, just take a track at this and you play and you lose? Like, how about we make this interesting? You know, one more game. I win. I get three packs of cards from you. Otherwise, you get my entire deck of cards right here.
Well, so that's, those are actually, there's formats that are considered limited, and these are most of the types of tournaments that I used to do back in the day. So instead of people essentially having like a set deck of like a bunch of stuff and then just showing up with it and like, okay, this is what you're playing, what they would do is there's drafts, which you might be familiar with. You just got a big table full of people. You know, you open up a booster pack, you take one card, put it in front of you, pass the rest of that pack to the person next to you, and then you like, you end up picking out of those booster packs. You do three packs. Mm-hmm. And then you try and make a deck out of that. And then there was another format that was called sealed. And this is what I played mostly. And that was, you get, I think it was six booster packs or something like that. And you just open them yourself. So you're just opening a couple booster packs. You make a deck out of that. And you play in the tournament with that. So everybody's kind of on like somewhat of a level playing field, as long as they didn't pull some bullshit out of their packs.
You want to know something about pulling some bullshit? No Time for Games subbing for 22nd month in a row. That is some crazy bullshit.
That ain't no bullshit.
Take your money.
That's some bullshit.
Congratulations. 22 months in a row. That is ridiculous.
It's some good
bullshit. He bought a lot of booster pets.
And now you can check out our wet pancakes emote. We finally have our wet pancakes emote.
Yay.
It's like drip.
It is not animated, sadly. I don't know if
they don't let you do animated.
No.
You can on Better Twitch, you know, the TV app, BTTV, but you can't on normal Twitch. No,
can't quite do it on Twitch. But if you get this, if you get on Shakes, you can do it there.
Jesus. Oh man. On that note,
folks.
On that note, I guess we could wrap up the MAGFest talk. It's been a little over an hour now, so I don't want to eat up all of your night.
Well, Joe, let me know when you. I would like to play some Magic with you, though.
Yeah, right.
We should play.
He's got a few things he'd like to show you.
Just don't let him hustle you.
No, on the computer.
No, bring your cards down. Let's play.
No, I don't want to use my actual cards anymore.
I'm going to burn them.
Probably worried that your kittens will eat them.
Yeah, very true.
It's like I'm going to burn the deck.
Kittens will eat whatever they want.
Oh, hey, what's this? Black lettuce.
They're like,
this looks delicious.
Most of my paper cards are like in an attic, like packed away somewhere.
Gotta
find
them. Funny
thing though, just on a random note though, since we were talking about board games earlier. You should look into one. I'm curious. You might not buy it because it's not the cheapest game. It's like 80 or something. It's called Millennium Blades, and it may be up your alley as something to goof around with. The premise is that you are playing a board game, which is a card game, in which you play as kids who are playing a card game. So
I love it.
It's ridiculous. I love it so much.
Your dog, I heard you like board games.
Put some board games in your board game so you can board game while you board game.
It is literally that. Like, you have a whole, there's like a moment where you have like 15 minutes in real time, I think, where you have to, there's like a store in the center of the table with like a bunch of quote unquote booster packs where you basically have to spend your money to buy the packs, to open them up, to see what's in the cards, and then you get rid of the cards, you sell them back to the store for a prop or a disc for a reduced price, you can trade with your friends at the table, all this junk, and then you have to prepare for the tournament that happens in the game, and then you have to play the quick tournament, and it's, you get points based on how you did there and how what kind of sets you built. It's
do you get a bonus for believing in the heart of the cards?
They have cards that do that, yes. They're all like friendship bonus cards and shit. It is ridiculously meta, and it is hilarious.
And what's the name of this game again?
Millennium Blades.
Millennium Blades.
It is legit. It is a legit game. Like I will play whatever someone asks me to. I love that game.
I just want to play a game of Hero Quest. I need company to come play Hero Quest with me.
Joe, download. No. Download Tabletop Simulator. No, for real. Download.
You're telling me to buy a Steam game. You're telling me to buy a Steam game.
Joe, for this one instance, you may actually agree with me.
Chris, just gift it to him. just save yourself the hassle and gift it to him.
Anyway,
I will back.
The point is, you acquire Tabletop Simulator. And once you have Tabletop Simulator, you go into the Steam Marketplace and you download the Hero Quest thing so that we could play it on there and not have to all be in the same room.
But I like having company.
But logistics.
You know, I'm in the bubble where I'm in a bad boat too. Like, I have a ton of board games here, and I've had friends that are like, you know, we do Tabletop Simulator. I'm like, in my case, I'm like, I have video games for that, like the tabletop.
Honestly, Tabletop Simulator is really good. Like, for what it is and what it's the purpose it's supposed to serve, no matter what game that you're playing, because there's actual physics in it, like you could kind of feel like you're moving the pieces. It's more interactable. Like, it's almost like pseudo VR-ish.
There is actually a VR version of that, too.
There is, nice. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, don't tempt me, because I mean, that might be the thing that gets me dabbling with it. I'm sitting on a stupid number of board games as it is.
Dude, I cannot recommend it enough. Like, especially, yeah. Like, I've been a big board game guy. Like, it's sweet, man. Like, it's totally worth grabbing.
Yeah, and the best part is that there's actually a command where if you get pissed off, you can literally flip the table.
Yes.
I think it's set so it'll automatically reset back before, you know.
Yeah, so you could undo it. So everything that you had up until that point, you could have the rage moment and then have zero of the like
consequence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The only downside is then you'll be like playing a real game with people someday. He's like, fuck! You flip the table over and he's like, undo. Shit, there's no undo button. Is there?
Also, no. Brian just got Mario Kart Monopoly for Christmas.
Nice.
Oh, speaking of freaking Monopoly, they finally got me, motherfuckers. Garbage Pail Kids Monopoly is coming.
Yes, oh, that's cool. I saw that.
I want it so bad. Like, I don't want, like,
Garbage Pail Kids, hell yeah. Oh,
yeah, geez. Buddy. That's my gen. I still buy them. Still, every new release, I'm in.
Oh, my God.
I'm staring, looking at the freaking horror Garbage Pail Kids right the hell now. Like, they keep making them. I keep buying them. I'm addicted.
That's crazy. I'm still surprised that Garbage Pail Kids are still a thing.
You and me both. Like, they announced I brought them back in, like, 2003 or something, and I lost my shit then. And they just kept going.
Yeah, they're still going.
The last time I saw Garbage Pail Kids is, like, back in the early 90s.
Yeah. I mean, those were that. Honestly, the best were still the oldest ones. They never got better than those. But yeah. Them, I mean, coming.
It's like Mega Man. You can only go so far before you really start, you know, wearing it thin with ideas.
Mega Man is a weird property in that regard, though. Yeah. Mega Man, I stand firm on my belief that the Mega Man formula is probably one of the most perfect game formulas ever crafted, because no matter how dumb they get with the weapons or the boss names or whatever, it's still enjoyable. I will still play in damn near any fan-made Mega Man game. I'll play any Capcom release Mega Man, you know, traditional game.
I'm not knocking the Mega Man formula, but I know, like, once you got far enough into the series, you can tell they were definitely struggling with boss ideas until some genius came up with Mavericks.
That is true. They had to freaking petition the freaking fans to come up with them. Hey, some kid came up with Blender Man. we could put him in a game, right?
Well, I mean, how, like, wasn't it, was it four or five that had, like, Dust Man? It's like, really?
That was four, yeah. Have
a fucking vacuum cleaner?
That was
a like a fucking robot vacuum cleaner. He's now a terrifying boss. Ooh.
Ooh,
how about you go terrify my living room carpet? That could use a good overlording. Yeah, that's it.
Oh my god.
There have been some bizarre ones. They had Tengu Man. Like, what? Like, who? Boy, what was the purpose of this design? Like, what's not the design about a Tengu bird robot? I don't fucking know. Like, yeah, they've had some bizarre ones. They really have. And it becomes more laughable when you figure the logic of originally, like, hey, these robots were designed to serve an actual purpose. They just kind of got warped and became evil. In that regard, though, Dustman actually makes more sense than, like, I don't know, Skull Man. It's like,
well, hold on. Let's see here. Top 10 most useless Mega Man bosses ever. Number 10, Lord. Charge Man.
He's a train. Aquaman,
Toxic Seahorse, Junk Man, Blizzard Man, Sheep Man.
Sheep Man.
Well, his level was awesome, though. I give it that.
Oh yeah, he was in Mega Man 10. Yeah, mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense.
That sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah.
Jeez, going for that title, hard Ring Joe. Man.
See, Bubble Man, who's just terrible. Yep. Number 2, Dust Man, and number 1, Slash Man. Really?
Slash Man is useful. He's a serial killer robot.
Yeah. Well, I'm not. I think they're going more on technical merits because I know Bubble Man. Like, you know, the concept makes sense, but like as a boss, like mechanically, he was like the easiest motherfucker in the game.
And he is pretty weak.
But still, like, you know, like Sheep Man, Junk Man, Spring Man. Oh no, I'm being attacked by a giant slinky with eyeballs. Oh.
His weapon wasn't very good either.
Yeah. Spring Man, his magic powers, just allergies.
He gets you sprung.
Uh-huh.
Hey, yeah. Joe did it.
Yeah,
but I mean, I had to get in there too.
I also, to no, yeah, Cole's also, ready for this to just be over with.
Yeah. Oh yeah, hey, don't forget about Hard Man. Wink, wink.
He gives you the hard knuckle.
Yuck. I mean, don't get me wrong. The stage music was fucking phenomenal, but, like, really? Hard Man? Like, come on. Hard Who man. Didn't make that penis jokes about that guy back in the day?
True.
I'm Hardman.
Yeah, I think we're going to wrap this up. We do have one review that we have to take care of. Chris, are you still here, Chris Taylor?
I see his picture.
The picture's still here.
He probably fell asleep long ago.
No snore. He put it on mute so the snoring wouldn't pass over.
Woof.
Chris is long gone.
Poor yep. Chris.
Poor Yerp. Chris. But we'll let the rest of you guys get going so we can move on with the rest of the show. Do any of y'all have any final words?
Happy New Year. Everybody, don't fuck up and have a good time.
Don't fuck up.
Don't fuck up.
Yep. We're on the cusp of a new decade. Don't fuck up.
So that weird. Entire time you were there, you were just muted.
Yeah, well, not muted, because I can hear myself on my microphone. It was turned on. I guess I was muted in the call somehow.
Maybe. Something glitched out.
Oh, well.
Oh, well, you're here now, and that's all that matters.
I am here. Now it's I didn't just, go to MAGFest, so it's okay.
Yeah. I figure this is the non-MAGFest time, so.
Yeah.
I'm having such a hard time getting used to these headphones. They sound so weird to me.
What's weird about them?
They just sound different from my last headset. I don't know if it's the mic monitoring. I don't know if it's just the overall sound quality. They just sound different, and I'm having a hard time getting used to it.
Yeah, that'll happen.
What happened to the old set, Dark Mega asks? Kitten happened to my old set.
The cat.
Yeah, the kittens are teething. And my keyboards and my headset has suffered because of said teething.
All of your electronics are forfeit.
Pretty much. I just hope they stay the hell away from, like, my new headset. The over break, Ashley surprised me with the LS35X. Which are wireless Xbox headphones from Lucid Sound, and they're really good, and the cats better stay the hell away from those.
Time to put them under lock and key.
Break time has been a bad time for my stuff with regard to the cats.
Jeez.
Yeah. Between all the keyboards getting damaged, the headset getting damaged, Punk had to go and pee on like 25 Xbox games.
Punk's a PlayStation fan.
He must be.
Time to put him up for adoption.
Oh, well, we should get to this review. We do have one review we got to take care of. Chris, are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, because the only game we're going to talk about tonight is called Dragon Sinker Descendants of Legend, developed by XCreate, published by Kemco, released January 8th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $14.99 as a Play Anywhere title, set out in search of the legendary weapons to free the world from the rule of Wyrmvarg. Chris, tell us about Dragon Sinker.
All right, Dragon Sinker. Well, of course, I covered this before on the 3DS, and I mentioned that it was actually my favorite Kemco XCreate game up to that point. Now, it's been a couple of years, and the thing about the Kemco XCreate games is that they tend to improve the formula, you know, incrementally with every new release. So here in 2020,
it's a little more dated.
Showing its age a little now, yeah, versus I think 2017 when I talked about it before, 16 whenever. No, it was early actually. I think I talked about it in like, yeah, it was like the third or fourth.
The early 40s. Way back in the day.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, the Kemco XCreate, I always say they basically come in a few different flavors. So, you know, one is your, you know, 32-bit style. Really, everything is very similar. You know, four-character adventure through a, you know, like the Altavista, the Azdivine games, and, like, one of my favorites was the, not Revenant Saga. There's so many titles.
There are a ton of Kemco games.
They've got one that's actually coming out, and I'm really excited about it based on the title alone, because it's called The Revenge of Justice. I'm really looking forward to that.
Nice.
Well, anyway, but you know, they've released a ton of games now, all based on their mobile games in Japan, and they do come out on mobile here too. And here lately, they've been translating them to regular systems. Well, Dragon Sinker actually follows a different formula, of which there are only two games, as far as I know. It's this one and Altavista Chronicles. It's a 8-bit flavored RPG, like it's retro, it's got pixels and things like that, but obviously it's got all the you know, the comforts of today wrapped in, and it's to where it's one of those, it's I don't know really what to call it. I'm gonna kind of call it a squad JRPG, because you actually, rather than controlling one team of four people, you control three teams simultaneously, each with four people, or cats, or owls, or monkeys, apes.
Yeah, the bear.
Yeah. And, you know, you basically switch between them and play off their strengths rather than, you know, charge into the enemy all at once like you do in Altavista Chronicles. So this one follows the adventure of Prince Abram and the elven princess Mia, and I can't remember the dwarf guy's name. But anyways,
I can't remember either.
I know. He's cool, though. Yeah, he's cool. I just talked to him, actually, in my game. I've been playing the whole time during this episode. And, yeah, they're humans, elves, and a human, an elf, and a dwarf, respectively. And those are the three races of this whole planet, and they all have to combine somehow within the story, and it's just the story's criteria, to defeat Wyrmvarg, who is a dragon, and with a great name. And also, who types alternately in capital and little letters, so it looks like an old Zanga blog. or somebody's AOL Instant Messenger like profile from back in the day. That's how the boss of the game talks. You know, because you fight him at the beginning, and of course, Prince Abram loses, and then, you know, this is, you know, you kind of regains his bearings and, you know, collects all this huge, amasses just a huge team of like different people. And, it all kind of comes down to, you know, you recruit at least one person in every town you visit. Like, it's just the recruitment rate of this one is on par with things like Suikoden and stuff like that. It's just every person with a name can be a character in your party, essentially. but you know, it's, the game doesn't really spend a whole lot of time developing these characters or anything like that. It just keeps basically to the relationships within the three main characters and like one or two other characters that are attached to them somehow.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Abram's got Bernard, who's his like kind of his, I don't know what you would say, like, kind of the Samwise to his Frodo, you know?
Yeah.
And,
his number two. You know,
yeah, his number two. And Cromwell follows Mia around, and, you know, they, of course, all get into arguments that turn really racist really quickly within the context of the game. They're just like, how dare you say that, you elven scum? And things like, oh, come on, guys. Let's calm down a little. You know, anyway, going straight for the throat. But yeah, like, so it's basically, and the other way that the game plays out, the storyline is that almost every interaction contains some choice of dialogue from Abram, who is, of course, the protagonist. And, the choices are usually that you can be extremely nice or extremely rude and or stupid. So you kind of get to play around, and it's of no consequence. Nothing that you say in this game matters to anybody, because Kemco later came out with a trust system whereby you could build relationships that actually showed up as real stats, but that's not in this game.
Yeah, this predates that. This predates a lot of the additions that Kemco's made to the games over the years.
Yeah, exactly. So, in fact, this is one of the first ones that feature the lottery system, and it's broke AF in this game. I mean, you know, when I reviewed it, I was very fond of the lottery system, but of course the modern games are much more sophisticated with it. This game, you know, I've now beaten it. I beat the 3DS version, and I'm getting into the console ones now. But yeah, you start the game with like the ability to roll, the dice on, basically 11 potential items, either superpowered weapons, and I do mean superpowered, like end game weapons, other characters that join your party and make every other character obsolete. Like, the minute you get a plain old house cat in your party, that's it. That character's staying. It's a cute cat, and they actually assigned a pixel to its butthole. they did.
Best pixel in the game.
Yeah, there's a, each of the cats have a butthole that is represented by a pixel.
Nice. I did not notice that.
Yeah, it's one of the first things I noticed. But, yeah, not only, like, the cats are not only super powered physically, but they also are the thief character with an extremely high success rate, so you can basically steal everything in the game. And if you happen to get an ape, which, again, you can win in the lottery, then that's your physical powerhouse. Like, that thing will stomp every enemy, like, 5 up to 10 times stronger than the other humans. Of which, by the way, you only equip items on the main three characters, on Abram, Mia, and an other guy. And everybody else just kind of, like, has to rely more on leveling up and gaining skills. So they really are, it's the one person figurehead and then other people assisting, unless you get the animals. Then they mop the floor with everybody. Oh, and there's an owl that's a super magic user too.
Nice.
But you know, once you've spent your initial DRP, which your, I guess, dragon points or something like that.
Derp.
Your derps, which I always call them. Then you start to gain them back at 5 derps a battle that, you know, it's just a common drop. It's not always guaranteed. And, you know, you need 100 to roll the dice again and 1,000 to roll the dice and get a bonus 1 spin. So, you know, and those are also like points that you use to purchase items that can get you like really good stuff ahead of time, including, well, funny enough, in the 3DS version, it was like stuff that would like double your experience points and such. But I noticed that now in the console versions, those are actually extraneous money purchases.
Well, they still have items that allow you to get either double XP after battles, or they have items you could equip that give you one XP per step that you take.
Yeah,
in the
that
game.
One's still there. Is the wait a minute? I'm gonna look right now. I'm in the menu at this moment. I was gonna say I think the double XP one is actually not in there anymore, because it's now a $5 download. Like, well, a DLC.
They have those in addition to the items that you could buy in the shop.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I see. It stacks with that one. Okay.
Yeah.
Never mind. Of course, yeah, I was in level.
They still have the Chemco microtransactions. That again, they're not necessary at all.
Oh,
you
no,
could
no,
easily
no,
play through
yeah.
the game without having to bother with them. They're just time savers if you want them.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually bought all three for Legend of the Tetrarchs. So, so Chemco does get my business on that sometimes. But yeah, like, so as an experiment, because it usually takes you a long time to like build up enough to start like playing the lottery. So oftentimes you just rely on like lottery tickets and, you know, which you gain also in the game, and they aren't directly tradable. So they're only for playing the lottery. But I just, this time around, I was like, okay, what the heck? I'm just going to spend all my 1000 at once. And when I did, I got enough permanent stat boosting items and an ultimate sword for Abram. To the point where I just dumped them all into Abram. And so he was at 500 HP at level 1, you know, versus like 30. And jeez. He was attacking for over 10,000 points of damage in level 1. I actually took a screen cap of doing an 86-31 damage to a slime. And so I've been one-shotting bosses.
God.
So that's
beautiful.
That's the thing that, yeah, they bring into Dragon Sinker. And, you know, that sword, it predates the swords eating other swords thing. So it's like, really, you just stick with the one weapon that you have and you don't like build on them or anything like that. So, yeah, I could just basically sail through this whole game now,
yeah,
which is kind of great. It's great in one sense. In another sense, it's kind of like some JRPG people want to take things more seriously, I guess. The other thing is that, you know, there's a lot of the monsters are extremely derpy. I didn't notice that my first time around, but this time around, I'm like, I just fought like a green Play-Doh looking ghost that was wearing like a scary mask. It's just like a bedsheet ghost with like a skull looking mask over its face. And then it's like, there's also like a big Stegosaurus that's just bright purple. Like, you know,
that's scientifically like accurate, by the way.
Yeah, right. I assume so. I mean, it has to be, right? But one thing I will say about this game, and this is this sets it apart from everything else that I know of in Chemco's oeuvre, is that it features a soundtrack by Ryuji Sasai, who is the composer for the battle themes and like the really memorable themes from Final Fantasy Mystic Quest.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, he was like Square's, like, yeah. He was a kind of like a backup composer for Squaresoft back in the day. And, you know, he composed like all these metal-tastic, like amazing themes in games that didn't deserve them.
wow.
But yeah, he actually, they kind of brought him out of, I don't know, retirement or whatever, because he hasn't been making video game soundtracks lately. And he did an 8-bit style, you know, soundtrack for this game, which is really good. It's quite good. Yeah, it's not Mystic Quest level, but that's yeah. Okay. What is?
Not much.
Yeah. So I guess you played this one too, huh?
Yeah. I could pretty much echo a lot of what you said. The only gripes I really have with the game is everything feels a lot more zoomed in than I'm used to in Chemco games. Usually the camera's pulled a bit back further. This one, it feels really zoomed in and big.
Yeah. You don't get a lot of screen in this game. And yeah, actually, that's funny enough. I never noticed that in the 3DS version, because the second screen was used for the map and also status for the three characters and like their teams. So yeah, now they have the map in the screen, and yeah, like on a big screen TV, it does look a little claustrophobic. You kind of spend more time looking at the mini map than the actual map in front of you, which is something they actually fixed for Alta Vista Chronicles. Like, it's pulled back just enough where it actually still feels like you're, you know, playing like a Super Nintendo game and not like a Game Boy game.
Yeah.
So
aside from that, I really enjoyed it. The Xbox One Windows 10 Play Anywhere is really helpful when you want to play on your computer instead of playing on the TV. You could jump back and forth that way. It's just a solid RPG. It's lacking some of the stuff that more modern Kemco games have, which could be a little bit of a detriment. But if you're interested in classic retro RPGs, Kemco's got your back.
Yeah, and I'll add a little something to that, is that, but I have to scroll over to it because I always forget the titles. Kemco and Hit Point actually put out those little 2-hour RPGs, Everdark Tower and the other one.
Those came out on the Switch.
Yeah, they came out on the Switch. So if you're looking, if you played those and you like, Archlion Saga, that's it. The like bite size RPGs, just think about this one as being like, one of those, but like 5 times the length.
That works.
It does have cool aspects, because sometimes the dungeons, especially in the late game, get really treacherous. If you're playing on a consistent difficulty, that is to say, you can always change the difficulty, to harder or easier.
Yeah.
But it really does actually kind of encourage you to play around with having different characters in your party to like change the parameters and the skills that you have available. Albeit every character tends to learn 1,000 skills, so you really have to kind of play with them and find your favorites.
Yeah.
But that's okay. But I do like the depth in the team building and things like that, and that's really not in the other Kemco RPGs, so that gives it a layer of strategy that I think is appreciated.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, well, that is it for this episode. Not a lot to it, just a lot of MAGFest talk and one review. Cole, are you still here?
I survived.
Sweet, and your mic still works.
That's
good for everyone.
Mine too.
Another thanks to Chris Huber, Pernell Vaughn, Ian Griffin coming on. Chris Taylor, thank you as always for coming on, doing your thing, even though we couldn't hear you for the majority of it.
That's okay. I wasn't saying anything important, so.
That's okay. None of us were.
There you go.
First show back, and it's awful.
Aww. I mean, I talked about the 1,000 Button Project, and that was important, so get fucked.